This is Fresh Air. Black citizens in Los Angeles and other cities have claimed for years that what they receive from police officials is not protection, but brutality. Often, white Americans have dismissed such allegations as radical rhetoric. But the videotaped bludgeoning of Rodney King in L.A. 2 weeks ago has shown just how real police brutality can get. King's beating touched a nerve in minority communities throughout the nation, including among black police officers. My guest is Ronald Hampton, a 19-year police veteran who also serves as National Affairs Director of the National Black Police Association. Hampton says he is encouraged that Attorney General Richard Thornburgh has promised a nationwide investigation of police brutality, but he doubts how serious that investigation will be.
We're in the process now drafting up a letter to send to the Attorney General to ask him to meet with us because we want to hear and we want to get some sense of his commitment to really doing this. Because, see, if he's going to be sincere and thorough, then I would suggest to you that he has to be prepared to somehow or another be able to divulge the dirty laundry of the criminal justice system to this public. And I don't think that they're ready to do that.
You've been, what, 19 years a police officer?
Yes, sir.
How much police brutality takes place in this country?
Quite a bit. And it seems to happen in the poor black and brown communities in this country. And I don't think it's by accident that those are the communities where we have less power, less access to the kind of things that demand attention or demand the equality or the distribution of equal services across the country.
Well, how have you seen it? What is it that you've ever seen take place? Have you seen things happen similar to those that, similar to the beating that Rodney King got in Los Angeles?
No, and I'm glad that I've never seen it at that level because if I had been on the scene at there, I would have pulled my service revolver and challenged the guys. And if they hadn't, I think I would have shot them because that was just, I'm still trying to reconcile my anger now as a person that they would even do that to another human being, you know. But you see...
Now, let me get this straight. You're saying you would have shot one of your fellow officers if you had seen him doing that.
Oh, I would have pulled my service revolver. It would have been up to him whether or not he would have, you know, caused me to shoot him. That would have been something else. But see, you know, there are laws. There are laws in the code all over this country that says that police officers cannot witness a felony and not take a police action. And the police action is an arrest. And that was assault with a deadly weapon. So, you know, sometimes I happen to believe in our organization that once you build a machine of destruction, that, you know, the time to stop it is to stop it from being built. Once it's built, then, you know, you have to do something drastically to draw the public's attention to this thing if it's gotten out of hand. And again, that's the extreme version. But the kind of things that go on every day are the casual violations of people's rights, if no more than the verbal abuse of a citizen who's entitled to be respected.
And now, what do you mean? What do you mean by verbal abuse? Have you seen such casual, ordinary, daily abuse by police?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you stop a citizen and you want his permit, or if someone stand on the corner and you walk up to him and say, you know, some police officers, they'll come up and say, hey, MF, you know, get off my GD corner, you know, and I want it right now. Well, you don't have to move, number one, because in our city, there's no anti-loitering laws, and you can't just talk to people and make them move. You can't demand any ID from them unless they happen to be driving a car, and that's a privilege. So they have to present their permit or license on demand. And normally, the people in policing tend to take on this godlike behavior once they put on this badge and uniform and carry a gun.
Officer Hampton, I want to ask you something. If these sorts of things are happening to black people and others in this country all the time, why are you as a black man still a police officer?
Because I happen to know that the only way they change is that change has to take place on the inside. That, you know, all of the pressure that citizen groups and citizens' goodwill can put on a police department. Police departments in this country act as closed societies. They really resent outside influence. But the fact of the matter is that police serve the people.
But you've been an officer for 19 years. That's
right.
A long time to have served, and yet you still say these things are going on.
That's very true, because most change takes place in you know, in spans of time, probably less than the eye can see. And as we plug away at the kind of things that happen, I mean, even in our police department, 15 years ago, our police department was 37% black. Today, we stand with 66% of the police department. But the policies that set in place the police institution in this country, historically white, male, dominated Protestant organization, are still in effect. Middle management is still disproportionately white. Even though I have a black chief and some black executives in my department, the person who tell most of the people to work every day are white lieutenants and white sergeants. And they bring to the job their own personal prejudices and other things. And their own experiences that they come from these communities that some of them don't even have African-Americans who live in the community with them.
So are you saying that this sort of behavior takes place in the Washington, D.C. Police Department?
Oh, yeah. And Chief Foote would tell you that. That there are problems in our police department as it relates to how we treat people. And one of the other things that I think we have to be very careful about, see, now we're in our society, now we're going through this grip of crime. And, you know, and for some time now, our society has painted the picture of criminal as being this young black male between the ages of 16 and 25 who is out of control on our streets. And the police people in this country think that almost every black man between those ages are criminals. So consequently, they treat them as such. And that's what you have to be careful about. You can never give police in any society carte blanche to operate because we move close to a police state. And I would suggest to you that we're close to a police state in this country today. Just because...
What do you mean by a police state?
Where police have total control, where they can do anything they want to do, and the public does not question what they do. I mean, the power that we have as police officers is given to us by citizens. That's where we get our power. We cannot do the things we do unless it was sanctioned by the people we serve. But you wouldn't believe that if you were to pay attention to the way some police officers act. They act as if the citizens are subservient to them and that they're in charge.
My guest is Ron Hampton. He's the National Affairs Director for the National Black Police Association. We'll take a short break and be back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ron Hampton, National Affairs Director for the National Black Police Association. Ron, you have described what you call a near police state that you think exists in this country, especially for black people. What's going to happen when you go to work after this broadcast airs? What do people say to you when you make comments like that?
Well, see, I've been saying it for 19 years. And before the 19 years I've spent before I started my 19-year career in the police department, I was in the Air Force. And I used to talk like that in the Air Force because, there are just certain things that ought to take place just by virtue of the fact that we treat one another like we like to be treated. And I'm not really concerned about what my peers think because I'm there to do a job, and the job that I'm there to do is to provide a service.
But you do have to work with them.
Oh, yeah, but they have to respect me, and that's all I require from them. They don't have to like me because I don't live with them. And they do respect me because I call it like I see it. But see, I would do that for anybody, whether they were black, yellow, green, or red. I wouldn't allow a police officer to abuse a white person. So you know I'm not going to allow them to abuse a black person. And I'm going to always call it the way I see it. Now, if they don't like that, then that's on them. But I'm not there to please anyone. I'm there to do a job. And everything that I do, I can go somewhere and pull it up out of a book and show you that that's the way I'm supposed to respond.
What has been the effect of this national attention to the police beating in Los Angeles? How is it going to affect your job as a law enforcement officer? How is it going to affect law enforcement in general?
Well, number one, I think it sets law enforcement back about 100, maybe 150 years, because one of the things that law enforcement agencies have tried to do over the last 10 years, I know for a fact, and that is try to create better and stronger relationships with the communities they serve. And this piece of film has done is, it has more or less made the community confident that you know, they have somehow, the community has been aware that that abuse has taken place, sometimes small, sometimes large, sometimes in the middle, all along, because they've been the victim of it. But they have been reluctant to speak out about it because their complaints sort of get disregarded. And if you go to the police station, they don't really pay you any attention, you know. But now we have caught this incident on TV, and it has more or less brought to the front of the front burner, the issue of police abuse in this country, not just in Los Angeles, but in this country. And now people are saying, well, I've told you all along that it's happening.
When is the last time that you saw a fellow officer undertake a brutal act? And can you simply tell us the story? Can you recount an occasion that you witnessed brutality?
Oh, yeah. It was about it was back in 1978 or 79. I was working in patrol section, and I happened to be in a car and respond to the scene where an individual had ran from the police. The call went out as someone was shooting crap. And so when we got there, the guy had ran. And obviously, you know, people run from the police. So when the police officer caught up with the guy, the officer grabbed him and said, you don't run from the police, and he hit him in the face. So
was this man your partner?
No. He happened to be in another car by himself. I was riding by myself. And at that time, I said something to the officer about it, his behavior. So then they put the handcuffs on him and took him to the police station. So once the guy got to the police station, they handcuffed him in the back and was processing him to get out. And they was just going to charge him with shooting crap in public, which was about $10 at that time. But the officer kept taunting the individual. He kept pushing him. He kept cussing at him. A whole lot of unnecessary stuff. All you're supposed to do is take a person in, process him, and let him go. So the guy had paid his $10 and was on the way out the precinct. The officer kept taunting him and taunting him and taunting him while he was leaving. So then the officer pushed the guy from the back. The guy turned around and hit the officer. And I mean, he hit him real good in the face, almost knocked him down on the ground. So the people in the precinct there grabbed the guy, placed him put the handcuffs on him again. The guy, at the same time he grabbed him in the back of the head, he pushed his head down. He took his right knee and kneed him in the chest.
The officer did this.
Right. So we have a policy where when an incident like that go down in the precinct, what they call APO, assault on police officer, every individual is supposed to write a letter describing what happened. So it was the sergeant who was in the station and witnessed it at that time was the official, and he asked everybody for a statement except for me. Now, you know, and I had a reputation on the job because, I came on doing what I thought was right. And I didn't hang in the pack, and I didn't smile and giggle with them. I did what I was supposed to do.
Well, did you file a report on your own?
No. Well, I wrote up a statement because I know what the policy says. So I wrote my statement, and I turned it into my sergeant. And he took it, and then he gave it to the other sergeant.
But was any action taken against the police officers?
No, wasn't no action taken against the police officer.
Still in all, this event that you witnessed was at least 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't suggest, surely, that the police brutality is a terribly common thing. Surely you would have seen something else besides that in the last 12 years if there were an enormous amount of police brutality in the Washington Police Department.
Oh, no. Well, see, what happens is that once you establish yourself as somebody who's not going to allow things to happen, then the word gets out about you. So those kind of things don't take place in front of you anymore. What I'm saying is, it's just like if you worked in the government and, you know, they call you whistleblowers. Well, at that point, they usually put you somewhere or they know that they can't do things around you. So you begin to set the tone. And see, that's why we say the change needs to take place internally. The officers of goodwill need to draw the line and say, I'm not going to do it, but I'm not even going to allow people to mistreat people. And then people won't do that in front of you.
Ron Hampton, what is your rank in the police department right now?
I'll give you one guess. I'm a police officer.
On the street.
Right.
Ronald Hampton is a police officer in Washington, D.C. He is also National Affairs Director of the National Black Police Association.